Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler, won't say it twice cause we already warned you.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is episode 677, Fallout. The
not,
Fallout.
Not a comedy.
A Fallout.
This is the adaptation of those video games.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Can we be on Spotify? Do we have to boycott it too? We don't have enough juice.
We can do whatever we want because it doesn't matter.
We don't have enough juice to boycott. One, no one would care, too. Like, we need every download we can get.
Yeah.
So
maybe.
Yeah.
But
you can also find us on Google Podcasts and Amazon and all the other places if you want to partake. Spreaker.
Again.
Zune. And you can also, while you're in any of those places, be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. And, of course, if you would be so kind as to leave us a review, that's always helpful. You can now rate podcasts on Spotify, but you've always been able to leave reviews on iTunes and places like that. And you can share an episode. It's the easiest way you can help us out. It doesn't cost you a dime. Just click share on your social media platform of choice to let like-minded people know that we're out there. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week: Chris Valls, Travis Tewitt, Chris Magic Man, Lane Levanway, Heather Sachs, Edward Fairfax, Ralph Tribble, Julianne Jordan, Gabriel Lugo, Tammy Sherman Powers, Chris Williams, Piecing It Together Podcast, Dan Buffa, Mike and Oscar, Ronnie Castle, Geek to Me Radio, Binge Movies, Batman Rye Guy, Vertigay 314, Linda Wright, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd Podcast, Feel and Film, Invasion of the Remake, and In Session Film. So thank you very much for sharing an episode. We greatly appreciate it. And don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out, and that is greatly appreciated. So there's all of that. Let's dig into
Royal Rumble.
Oh, I'll talk about
that. Oh, blue. What the hell is wrong with you?
Why? Sorry,
all day.
I caught the bug.
Why would you throw that out there?
Very quickly.
What was your review of the Royal Rumble?
It was good. It was a fun show. It was, everything was pretty predictable. I didn't know that I guess at this point, people already know. I didn't know that Ronda Rousey was going to be there. I stayed away
She's
the world's most popular
She was
athlete.
At one point.
That's why I texted him.
And what did I say? And then she won.
That's true. Right. I know. It's cementing her status.
But no, so like, you know, the people will say, reports will leak and say this person signed a new contract, this person's going to
be
there.
Like when people leak stuff about the Batman.
It's the wrestling is worse because like, people want to have that, like, it's constant, like, this person's coming back, this person's like, whatever. So I didn't read anything, so that was a fun reaction. The crowd was good. The building was garbage as far as, like, the way it was run. It was not a good show as far as that's concerned. But it was fun. It was a good show. Did you have fun?
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. And signs were catching on fire.
Oh, yeah, the WrestleMania sign caught on fire.
They needed to aim fireworks straight at a WrestleMania sign so it would go off and have all these, you know, things that looked more impressive than a sparkler. And both times it caught on fire. Like, whatever they did, it was like... They then knew for the second time, they're like, well, nothing's going to change here.
Yep. So they just went ahead and set it off, and then we're like, just bring it down real quick, and we'll set it and put it back out. But it was a good show. It was fun.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. It was predictable, but predictability's okay.
Yeah.
Every once in a while. You don't need
whatever
to have
happened
that.
To predictability.
That's what I'm saying. Like, just please, at this point, like, be predictable. Give me something. So this movie's kind of interesting. Like, I think we are all in, like, different age ranges when Columbine happened. So, like, do you remember where you were, like, when it happened?
I was 49 years old.
Okay.
No.
Perfect.
You believe that a little too readily.
Well, that's true.
No, I was Columbine, I
was 99.
Was 99, so I was on the air at a radio station.
Okay. So what was that like when it happened? Like, did they break into you? Did they say, like, hey, this is going on?
I mean, we were just watching it on the TV, and we were a music station, so it's not like we did news, so we didn't stop down to address it. It was just, you were just watching it unfold. It was also, like, the year anniversary, I think. Maybe it was a five-year anniversary of
that bank heist?
No. God dang it. The Timothy McVeigh.
Oh, Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City, yeah.
Oh, that's weird. I didn't know that.
At first I thought somehow it was connected to that, but
sure.
You know, but yeah, I mean, I just honestly, this is awful to say. It's really hard to remember Columbine just because there's been so many. They all blur together.
The only reason it stands out for me is because I was a senior in high school. Like, I was in school when it happened. So, like, and what were you?
I was probably in middle school or. You know.
And did they address it at all?
I don't remember.
I definitely remember, like, them being like, you know, I don't remember what class I was in, but, you know, we always had CRTVs in every classroom or whatever. And I think it was in the process of happening, and somebody turned on the TV, and it was just like, you know, like those school TVs got, like, Channel 1, which was like a teen, quote unquote, teen news source. It is weird, like, seeing Lisa Ling, who is, like, on HBO now. She's got her own show. She was like the lead anchor on Channel 1 News when I was in high school.
That's funny.
So any elder millennials that know what I'm talking about know that Lisa Ling was on our TVs every morning. But yeah, like, it's you're right, though, is now it's just so commonplace now.
Right.
But yeah, I was in high school. So, like, this
it's
movie,
like, oh, the new fall lineup's out of school shootings.
Can we get the upfronts this year, and can we avoid, like, maybe those altogether?
Yeah, this year they're wearing a trench coat with a pleat. It's all the rage.
No more dusters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, this movie was interesting. Like, I didn't know anything about this going in, and obviously from our discussion just now, you can tell what happens in this movie. So this movie kind of centers around three characters. It's Veda, Mia, and Quentin, who are these three high school kids. And Veda leads this it feels like a very normal life. Mm-hmm. She's got her friend, and she doesn't really. Initially, I thought that this was a different movie altogether, where, like, her and her sister are living together. And I was like, okay, so these two kids are on their own.
Right.
That's what it seemed
like. You know, like, it feels like that she's, you know, kind of just floating through life, but she's also got to take care of her younger sister.
Well, you kind of think that in the beginning, but then I think what it really shows you is how close she and her sister were.
Yes. Which even more so leads to, like, you know, that it's just them. You know what I mean? Like, when the Veda, played by, is it Jenna Ortega?
Yeah, from Scream.
From Scream, who is a very different character from the character in Scream. Like, this is a very different character.
Yeah, I mean, in this performance, it's a complex performance, and she's really, really good in it.
Yeah.
And it's starting to click now why she's showing up in so many things, right? Because she's in Ty West's new movie, X, that we were talking about.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She was just in Scream as one of the leads. She's in this movie, and it's like, she's really good. She has a very genuine quality, you know. I mean, she doesn't seem like she's acting. She, like, her character in this is very carefree, but when she has to do some of the more dramatic stuff, it just feels so real. Like, it was a completely believable performance. And
this movie is very, like, mumblecore or at least mumblecore adjacent.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely.
Yeah. Totally.
It's
and this is the director's directorial debut, and she wrote and directed it.
Okay. And this won something, right? Like this one.
Yeah, so Megan Park is the director, writer director, and I think it was one of the selections at South by Southwest, like it won best I think best script, couple things, but it was getting a lot of recognition, and so HBO Max picked it up. This is an HBO Max exclusive, but it's not a like a, I guess maybe, I don't know if they call them originals, but you know what I mean, it wasn't developed for HBO
they
Max.
They didn't order this into production, but they acquired they it, and it's and it's only available through there.
Exactly.
A lot of those documentaries are like that too. Like,
oh, are they?
Yeah. Or like or what is that show on PBS?
Nature.
Like American
Psycho.
No,
Graffiti.
But
Pickers.
There's American Lens.
Masters?
I think American Lens. I think okay. it's called. But okay. a lot of those are documentaries that were released theatrically on the art house circuit, and then they pull them in and make
random
an episode of their show.
That's why it's sometimes kind of hard to wrap your head around. Like, I think it's interesting to know, was this movie developed for a service?
It's getting harder and harder to tell, like, what's what. I mean, CNN does it all the time too, where they'll make
something will pop up at the end. You're like, presented by CNN. You're like,
yeah, like,
whoa,
they'll make a documentary and release it theatrically, but then air it as like one, like, Love Gilda was like that. Mm. Three Identical Strangers. I know it aired on CNN.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if it was made by CNN, but it might not have been made by CNN, but I know it aired on CNN.
Interesting.
They, on Saturday,
man, that was good. That
was
a good. That's,
yeah,
I saw that in theaters and I was just like, that is awesome.
Yeah. I just rewatched it like a couple weeks ago.
That's
like,
the three dudes that have no relation whatsoever, but all are identical.
No, they grew up completely apart.
And they meet as young adult, as like 18, 19 years old, and they start to realize that they're all
related.
Oh,
and I don't want to go any further.
But,
the
reveal is just like,
because that's the first twist of the movie. Because
you ask, how can this be?
Right.
Because you're like, how is this possible?
And so like, that feels like a major spoiler to the film. It's a major reveal in the film, and it's like in the first 10 minutes.
Right.
Then from there, it's a roller coaster of reveals. So if you've never seen Three Identical Strangers, do yourself. I think it's out there for free on like Amazon or Hulu or something. It's out there.
I'll check that out.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, if you want to watch a series, like a mini series type thing about true crime, and it reveals itself in a way, like, does the thing that Three Identical Strangers does, The Jinx?
Jinx is
holy
crazy
crap.
That thing that happens.
Yeah.
And Robert Durst just passed away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to spoil the thing, but it's just like, if
the way The Jinx ends, if that was a movie, we would complain. Because you'd be like,
you think so? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Like, you wouldn't, you wouldn't
it's
buy
so, it's so not
it's,
real.
It's so, like, it would come across as so fake if that was in a narrative structure. But, like,
it makes you rethink sometimes. Like,
but the fact that it happens in real time,
right,
in real life.
But, yeah.
Don't look up anything. But if you want to
watch it.
If you want to watch that and then just see how things keep happening and whatever, it's just like,
The
oh
Jinx, I remember watching The Jinx, and I was like, I'll check out the first episode. And then I was 5 deep.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I guess I'm finishing this today.
Also, The Staircase on Netflix.
Staircase
is really
also
good.
Really good.
I haven't seen that. But I'm not a huge, like, I haven't seen as many true crimes. Like, I think Tom's seen a lot more than me. But, like, to me, The Jinx is the best I've ever seen. Like,
if you like The Jinx, check out The Staircase.
But I watch other ones thinking, like, I need something the level of The Jinx. Like, was so good.
Yeah. But yeah. But The Staircase is really good. And the, I can't think of words today. The trilogy that they made about the kid that gets convicted on Satanic Panic in that small town.
Oh, dang. What is that called? Yep. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But anyways, so this is real. This is becoming such a real part of life, and it's sad that we're at the point where, like Tom says, that they all blur together. Like, that is horrible that we're at this place.
When our kids are having to do intruder drills
instead
of fire drills, you know, like, that's where we are.
Right.
In this.
And so this movie, it touches on something that a lot of people can relate to, and like younger kids, I think this is probably an important movie to watch for people that are in high school, because they're dealing with these emotions. And I think this movie has a lot of, and this is not an eat your vegetables type movie, but watching this, you are like, wow, look at what these people are going through and how easy it is to brush it off and try not to ask for help, and seeing how different people deal with it in different ways, mm-hmm. different losses, different experiences. And so I thought it was a really powerful movie. And I mean, very, you know, important for these times, and also very sad and an emotional movie, because these are very real things, these school shootings.
Yeah, it's also, I was touching on the HBO Max thing. I think that this is one of the advantages of all these streaming services, is I would have never, this goes to theaters, right? And it doesn't get eyeballs. It's going to get some eyeballs on it.
Yeah, I'm not convinced it will. Like,
you don't think that people are just flipping through?
Well, one, it's like the way that they structure the interface on these streaming things.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much content on there.
That's true.
That if it's not something that they make one of their top four things they're pushing, like, it just goes right by people.
Yeah.
Like, I'm, you know,
but this one is on the, like, featured on their Square.
I know, like, I watched Last Duel earlier in the week and was like, I had to search to find Last
That's
Duel.
That's so weird.
And it's, I mean, it's Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, and Adam Driver. And right, I had to I had to go into the search function to look up Last Duel. You would have thought,
that's crazy.
I'm scrolling through like new big movies thinking like, oh, it's going to be like
Kong versus Zilla.
Yeah, it'll be right there. Right. And I'm like, nope.
I've done that before with Netflix. A movie comes out that day and I have to search for it.
Yeah.
If a movie comes out, I expect to turn on Netflix and it's one of the featured things. Like, I don't want to look for, I want to go, oh, the new things, right?
There
it's
is right there.
So weird to put out a new property and bury it.
They just have so much content.
That's what it is.
That, like, they can't, you know, you can't emphasize everything.
Sure.
And so I do think that there's a lot of stuff on these streaming platforms
that gets passed over,
that people don't even realize is there because it's just, it's hard to find.
But I do think, though, to your point, Joe, that even if it's, maybe it won't take off like gangbusters or whatnot, but I do think, especially right now in this time and place, that if this goes in theaters, and it would be art house theaters and, you know, AMC fancy in the tiny theater in the corner, you know, they would put some of those out, but it's going to get overlooked. And I think at least you're going to get a, you know, several million will watch this. It may
it
not
has
be 50
at least
million,
but as good of a chance of being seen here as an art house cinema for sure.
Yes.
My concern about a movie like this is how many people are going to be like, oh man, you have got to watch the school shooting movie.
That's
right?
A like fair statement.
It,
yeah.
You know, like
sure.
it's, I mean, it's a, you know, you say it's not Eat Your Vegetables. I kind of feel like it is. It's good.
Really?
It's absolutely good.
But it doesn't feel like
it's a difficult movie to watch, though, right? Like, it's a hard, it's, I think it's a hard sell to get people to sit down.
I don't know
to
about
watch
that.
This.
The only reason I say that is, I mean, sure.
I mean, on paper, definitely.
The school shooting thing, and it's masterfully done. Like, I think that the way they do it is they don't show
super
you anything.
Intense.
It's super intense.
Yeah.
God, yeah.
That whole, so we should say the whole scene is Veda's sister calls her in the middle of class. So call me, please call me 911. Veda leaves the classroom, goes outside, calls her sister. She's like, I started my period. And she was like, don't text me 911 for something like that.
And I think, like, I, same way, went in this movie not knowing what it's about. I think that setup is kind of a head fake for the people who do know what it's
right,
about.
Right, because they think
big
that's
time.
It.
They, when she gets the 911 text, if you know it's about a school shooting, you're going to think the other kids in the school
shooting.
Yeah.
You know?
That is a pretty good head fake. And even if you don't know, you know, the title Fallout could be anything,
right?
Especially with high school kids. It could be a relationship.
It was
could
a
be,
red herring.
Yeah. It was a red herring. Our Veda goes into the bathroom, runs into kind of like the, I'm not going to call her the mean girl because she was never,
She was never mean.
She was very pretty and kind of vain about the way she looks, but she was never mean.
I love the fact that she wasn't the mean girl. Like, because you find out that this is the, like, the pretty girl at the school that everybody thinks is too cool to hang. Like, she's so cool they can't be around
her. Yeah, she's so gorgeous and so talented that instead of going to mean girl with follower status, it goes to everyone thinks they're not good enough.
Right. Right. So. And so she's actually kind of alone, but like, she's got a social media following. She's like a micro influencer is 25,000, but she's got like 85,000 Instagram
which is another commentary that's I think for this age group that's very important to see, is it's that whole, like, you know, money can't buy happiness.
It's
that
old
saying.
Yeah.
And look at the life she lives, and she is rich. Her parents are rich. She, you know, they're always gone, though, right? So it's like she's got money and a great house, but her family's not there. She doesn't have friends.
She has all this freedom.
Yeah. You know, but she has likes, right?
Yeah.
And so it just shows you that the people you see on social media, you know, in their real life, it's not always as, you know,
right,
picture perfect.
And we look at Veda, and Veda dresses, you know, big baggy t-shirts, basketball shorts, you know,
tomboyish,
very different from the way Mia dresses.
Yeah.
So they kind of have a little bit of an interaction where Mia's like, you don't need all that makeup, like you're pretty enough as is. And then there's like a pop. And they kind of stop for a second, and they're like, oh, it must have been a firework.
When I have subtitles on, gunshot,
oh, dude.
Gunshot.
Oh, so dang.
Like, so, you know what I mean? Because I'm, too, I'm like, wait, what? And then I'm like, well, it has to be because it described it as that.
Sure.
You know?
So, but, yeah, so they stop for a second, and they're like, oh, it was just a firework. And then there's a lot.
And it's a lot.
And they both, you know, they both kind of jump into a stall, and they jump up on this so they can't see their feet.
But things happen, like one drops an earring. I think Mia drops an earring.
Mia drops an earring, yeah.
and then
Veda jumps
like
down
up,
to grab
you know,
it.
And then her shoes are hanging down. She just take those off, and they
drop
them
in the
toilet.
It
is a really tense moment.
Yeah, and without glorifying what's going on outside.
Yeah, you never see.
With the exception of when Quentin comes in, that's the only look of blood.
Yeah, but you never see the shooter.
No.
You never see, like, I mean, you hear his name, like, in passing.
Do they?
Yeah,
they do
say it, because they're saying, like, especially in that last scene with their dad. They're like, F this guy.
Right.
But they never even have to give, after that, they never even have to give that character, like the shooter, any more spotlight or attention.
We don't deserve it.
This focuses on the victims.
Right.
And the way that it can just follow them so specifically, their lives, this little slice, and never have to go to like, oh, and this court thing, or oh, and his parents talk,
or what were they thinking?
You know,
it never dives
into the mind of the killer. And that's the thing, is like, we've seen a lot of movies that follow that side, that, you know, and we've seen, obviously, there's documentaries and things like that.
There's a really good Gus Van Sant movie.
Is it called Elephant?
Elephant.
Yeah.
That was probably like the first post-Columbine movie about a school shooting.
Which is, that's a slick movie, and I don't really like Gus Van Sant, but that's neither here nor there. That movie, like, the end of that movie, you're just like, oh,
yeah.
Because there's no lead up to that. You don't know what's going on until you see those spoilers from Elephant from 1999.
Yeah.
Where those two kids go walking up to the school wearing the same outfits that those two scumbags wore.
Right.
And you're just like, oh,
yeah,
this is okay.
This is what
now
we're
I
doing.
See what we're doing.
But yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that they stuck with, you know, the few characters, and we got to see that side of it. And again, something that a lot of people can relate to, with survivor's guilt. You know, they ask those questions like, why me? Why did I deserve to? And I think it's really interesting to see what goes through the mindset of a person in that position, because you can't imagine unless you know what I mean? You can never really truly understand, unless you were faced in that situation, what a person's mind would be going through.
I also think it's important that they're telling a story, but you don't. I think it's important to not see the shooter, because I think it would be very easy for someone that's not mentally stable to see that and
identify with it
and be like, F yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, that's what I want to do. So I think it is also helpful, not to turn this into an after school special, but it's also helpful for maybe someone on the fence to see, like, this is what you leave behind, and like, you know, you're not just hurting the people you want to hurt.
Right.
You're also hurting a lot of people that you maybe care about, or maybe you're not even aware of them, but they are innocent.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And so, like, that might actually end up being a helpful message for someone that's not in the right headspace.
Yeah. I mean, I think we ran into that problem with Joker, right? Like, as much as I think those performances are amazing, like, there's a lot of problems with the way that he is portrayed in that movie. So like, now we get the door opens, we hear the door open, and we see another character come running in, and he's covered in blood. His name is Quentin, and he is in the stall next to them. And then he kind of like, he says, I'm not the shooter. Like, they killed my brother.
Yeah.
And he like, she's like, get over here. So she, at first I was like, don't crawl on the floor, you dingus. Like, you're going to leave tracks. What are you doing? And like, as he's crawling across the floor, he's leaving blood trails, because he's covered in blood all over his shirt.
Which
he's
that
not
was another
shot,
really tense moment, because you don't know what's going to happen. And
we've seen enough Scream movies that we don't know who the killer is.
Right. They keep planting those little seeds to where you're like, oh my God, is it going to be the killer? No, it's this other guy. Well, is the killer going to come in now and see this stuff? And they really ramp up the tension in this moment. Again, with everything off screen, which, as we've said a lot of times, sometimes it's scarier what you don't see.
Sure.
Like, your mind run and you don't know.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is we've seen this. we've seen CCTV footage. We've seen every, you know, so we know what that looks like.
Yeah.
As a people, maybe we haven't experienced it, but that doesn't mean we haven't seen exactly what's going on in those hallways or that lunchroom.
It's like horrible it's, what you imagine is happening.
And I think also there is a tendency to focus on the kids who get shot or interact with the shooter, right? Like, which makes sense, you know, but like, with the exception of Quentin, the other two, they didn't.
No.
Like, so it's real easy if you hear the story to be like, I ran in a bathroom and hid until it was over.
Story over.
Big deal.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And the thing is that we follow these two characters, but every kid in that school has a story where they, you know, they just had to hide in a room.
Well, it's like
it's
like Veda's other friend was in like a different classroom,
right?
You know, and he was just like, "We same deal." Like, and then all of a sudden they're like, "Shut the."
And he's just as damaged, right?
Yeah.
It's like it's, but he becomes like the David Hogue of the school, and but that's just his version of what she's doing.
Yeah
that's
he's got a different side to his story,
right?
But that's also the great part of this movie, though, is that we see all those different sides of how people deal with things.
Yeah.
You know, they follow these characters closely, and it's only a few, but they give you a different type of way that they deal with it. And so I just think that's interesting, because there's going to be one of those characters that people that have gone through things like this.
Yeah, sure.
There's a lot out there, unfortunately, and I think that they're all going to be able to relate to, you know,
have
somewhat
they,
of
that's
these
interesting.
Characters.
Have they ever talked to survivors of Columbine? Has that ever been a thing?
Oh, I'm sure they have. I'm sure that's been researched
probably
a million ways.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
You would think.
I would think.
Yeah.
But anyway, you kind the reason why you probably don't know of it is because how exploitative would that
sure,
you know what I mean? They
sure,
want to
sure,
be
sure.
careful. It's a hard thing to do to create what might appear as entertainment factor in any form, whether it be documentary or, you know what I mean? It just,
right. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah, it's going to be perceived badly by someone, and it's difficult. And
right.
You don't want to traumatize them anymore.
So no, like, sure. Everything happens, and then we flash forward to Veda kind of like in her room, and she's not okay, right? Like, she's having nightmares, and which is totally makes sense. And I like the scene where Julie Bowen plays her mom. And again, like we talk about performances, Julie Bowen, as I've said in the chat, has become like a really good comedic actor. And that's kind of where she's lived for the last 50 years on Modern Family, or however many seasons that show
is. It was like 11 or 12. It was on for a long
time. I mean, good for them. Like, that's great. Because that show's.
Yeah, it ended like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah, something like that. I love that show. That show's so good.
It was funny. I didn't follow, like, I probably haven't watched the last couple seasons, just kind of. Whatever.
That's one of the best comedies.
It's a really good show.
It's fun.
Like it's easy to be dismissive of it because it's kind of like so mainstream middle America, but it's really well done.
Yeah, it's a fantastic cast.
Yeah, very funny show.
And she gives a great performance too, as this mom who's kind of high strung, but makes sense, right? Like, her daughter could have died, and her daughter's starting
like
to like pull away.
Mom in that situation.
Totally.
Yeah. You know? I mean, yeah, they're a little protective, but also when. That's another side we didn't even mention. That's the kids. How do the parents deal with it?
Right.
Raising kids is hard enough. We all do it.
Yeah.
And to now have to throw in this entire new thing, which is going to require, you know, medical care, you know, speaking with
psychologist, help,
medications, kids acting out, you know, which is exactly what our main character does, or one of the characters at least. So we're seeing all these different sides. And I do think that, again, especially as parents, is really touching, because you're like, crap, that's going to be a sensitive situation to deal with, right? You don't want to like push them.
You don't want to be overbearing, but you don't want to let them go. Like, you're in this weird spot.
You don't
want
to say, oh, you can just never do school again.
Yeah,
because
you're not
in the right headspace. It's like, well, that's not going to be good for the rest of their life, right? So you have to be delicate.
Kind of
right?
have to go back to school. Like, it's kind of important. Yeah. But
there's a little moment where where the mom's like, you know, you have to go back to school at some point. And the kid's like, why?
Right.
Like, I've had conversations like that. My kids haven't been through school shootings. And I'm just like, that's just stupid. Well, one, if you're saying something that stupid, it shows how much you need education.
Right. Get your ass back in
school.
That's
a dumb thing to say.
Right, right,
And but it's like, if you tell them that's a dumb thing to say, like, now you got a whole other thing in your hand.
Right.
And it's
interesting. Like, I think you could get away with that's a dumb thing to say when it's like a kid that just doesn't want to go to school.
Yeah.
You know, but when you're dealing with a kid who has had this massive trauma, it's not the best thing to say, you know.
But at some point, you do.
Like you have to.
You can't go to apply to college or apply to jobs and go, oh, well, I never went back to school because I was in a school shooting. So, you know, you're just going to have to deal with the fact that I didn't complete my basic education.
Right,
right.
They're
gonna say, thanks. Sorry that happened to you, but you're not. How are you going to do this job?
And, right.
But,
what do you expect to do here? So she is not taking a hands-off approach, but she is kind of giving Veda enough room to kind of deal with this on her own. And
the other thing, from a parent's point of view, there's no guidebook for this.
Hell no.
Right?
No.
Like, there are certain things when kids do that you kind of like, okay, every kid stays out too late or maybe comes home drunk when they shouldn't or whatever. And, like, there's some sort of, like, you know, how did you handle it when your kid did that? But there isn't for this one.
There's going to be. That's the scary part, right?
I mean, there is and there isn't. Because it happens with too great a frequency, but it also happens with frequently enough that there isn't a huge pool of people to reach out to.
Right.
For a parent to reach out to ask that question.
Sure.
Which I think is, again, why movies like this are important, though, right?
Yeah.
Because they're easy to digest. It's a movie, and you do have a really interesting story where I found it was balanced with enough humor, not as in a bad way, but
Bowen has a hilarious.
There's a very, very funny scene with her towards the end of the movie.
I thought was amazing.
It doesn't undermine anything.
Exactly.
It doesn't undermine it. It underscores what's going on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's enough lovely throughout. And even with Veda, like she says some very, like, Veda is the kid that just seems like everything, she's all right. She never lets it be shown, and that's the problem, which this movie's trying to touch on. One of them is that kids hold their emotions in, whether they see it's presented as weakness or they think people will judge them for it, you know, whatever the reasons are, and we see a lot in this movie. But Veda is always joking, and she's smiling, and you would think, well, hey, that kid's got a perfect life. Like, she's got a great family. And
until she can't go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Until she has a breakdown, you know, until she wakes up in cold sweats.
But Shailene Woodley plays a very small two scenes in the movie.
I gotta tell you,
when
she showed up on screen, and I was like, well, she's not old enough. What are you? Why?
Yeah.
She's not a therapist. What is this? Is stupid.
My wife said the same thing. And then I was like, Joe looked it up. She's 30.
She's 30. And I was like, I guess that tracks.
Yeah. And she was like, she was just in that movie where she was a kid. I was like, honey, that was 8 years ago.
Yeah. Divergent was like 2014 or something.
She's like, what?
Well, Maddie Ziegler, who plays Mia, is that little girl from the music video with Shia LaBeouf.
What that music video with Shia LaBeouf?
Sia, where she's.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah. She has her shirt off, and she's doing gymnastics or whatever.
She was on the show Dance Mom. She was one of the moms.
Sure, yes.
But that's Maddie Ziegler. She was just, I thought of her as a little girl in this music video because she was, right?
Yeah.
And that was a few years ago, and it just, time goes by so fast, you know. Anyway.
But I did, like, when she...
It's not going to get better.
No, it's not.
Just
you
know.
Right, right. I mean, I made that joke on the Scream 4 podcast when I saw Hayden Panettiere. And I was like, she was the daughter from Remember the Titans. Like, that's what I remember her as the cute little spunky kid that's, like, trying to get her dad to be a better coach.
She'll always be the cheerleader to me.
Well, I mean, that's, sure. But, just, I mean,
every time I see her, save the cheerleader, save the world. A show with so much promise.
Yeah, two seasons were really
so
good. Everything else, now that was garbage.
Yeah, well, 1.5. The writer's strike
happened, right?
And, you know, derailed the entire thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is such a shame because they set up so much cool stuff.
They did.
Hero
coming
back from the future.
Don't know what's
cool
going
with
on.
Sword.
With his hair slicked back?
Yeah, surely we'll see how that plays out.
Sure won't. Worf is in this show?
Yeah, there's so many cool, there were so many storylines and so many cool characters, you know, different people with all these powers and like, oh my God, you're waiting for it all to really.
And then they drop the ball.
Oh.
And then they're brothers, but then they weren't brothers.
Oh, that show was the worst. It was so good, but yeah. So Shailene Woodley plays
a therapist.
Go on to this real quick because she's in two scenes, one toward the beginning after this happens and then at the end of the movie to check in with in a really good scene. We see that like people need help, and Shailene Woodley's character says to
is she sponsored from the school or did
the mom
the mom hired her?
Yeah,
okay,
the mom
realized
she needs some help, and so but she says things like it's okay to show emotions, like it's okay to tell people how you feel and to get them out, because if you repress them, you're never going to actually deal with them,
right,
and
right.
and start to heal. You're just shoving them aside and saying, you know, I'm not going to deal with that. But years go on, they can go on and on and on, and
yeah.
you've gotten nowhere. So she gives her that advice and to live and track things in a journal. And I don't think you really ever see her doing that, like, actively.
She has it at the end, like, yeah. it's all crumpled
yeah,
up.
Clearly,
but
she's
never,
done it.
Yeah,
but,
right.
We don't see it.
Yeah, we don't see her, like, it's not like she's like, oh, live, go on a hike with a friend. You know what I mean? It's like the movie isn't about her doing specific, like, guided things, but
yeah.
she's been keeping track, apparently, and we see the thing that she's doing. Relationships change. Like, she starts to bond with Mia, who
oh,
was
yeah.
just this girl that was, you know, she thought was pretty and cool and never, and kind of nervous to talk around.
Right.
And, but they, you know, two totally different people come together through this shared
experience.
They come
together.
Yes,
well,
they do. Hopefully they do. But that's my point, though, right? Is not only is this movie dealing with the fallout of a school shooting, you've also got Veda, who is trying to figure out who she is as a person, right? So we should say that she does begin sort of a romantic relationship with Mia, where it's just friendship.
I don't think it's a romantic relationship at all until that one scene, right?
I don't know.
Like, I never got that read at
no.
all until they actually
yeah.
did it.
Hooked up.
They were
yeah.
just good for, like, you
and
don't
I'm not even
that.
Convinced either of them are lesbian or bisexual.
I think they were confusing their feelings as they
yeah,
worked through all
I,
this
I,
stuff,
like,
right?
It,
what's the trauma a, does, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, like, they were trauma bonded and
yeah.
they didn't have another way to express their connection.
Right.
Yeah. And that's
the way it came out.
And that's the way it came out.
Because neither of them was, like, upset or mad later, as
right.
in, like, oh, you feel this way and I don't.
Well, they were mad.
Versa.
I think they were mad. They were both kind of on the fence because they didn't want it to muck up the friendship.
Yeah. Well, I think Veda did. Mia was trying to contact her and stuff. Like, she,
yeah.
you know, she says later, like, yeah, I've been thinking about that. But Veda, I mean, going way into the movie, but Veda kind of cuts things off because after that happens and she doesn't know how to deal with that or how to feel. And then later on she said, well, I don't want to ruin our friendship. And then they both, you know,
move forward.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, so she starts to stalk Mia, and not in a creepy way, but just like sometimes you do, like you find somebody that, you know, and you start going through their Instagram page.
Oh,
and
really?
We're backing
Tell
up.
Me more.
Yeah.
We're,
and
yeah,
just
right.
for the listeners, we're backing up now,
yeah, yeah.
not, but way before that they've,
yeah,
engaged.
Yes, physically. Yes, yes. Correct, yeah. correct. And I think does Mia? I think they follow each other, and then does Mia send her a DM that says, "Here's my phone number."
So
because I don't know how Veda gets
so
the phone number.
Mia started following Veda on Instagram,
right?
And then Veda reached out.
Is that what it was?
And was like, "How you doing?"
Okay,
not. How you doing?
Right. Like, how are you?
Yeah. It looked like yeah. she got her number off Instagram.
And then she sent her the number. Yeah.
Okay.
Or, yeah.
What I found, another thing I found interesting is so often in these movies, they don't get, like, the rights to use the screen logos or the way things like instant messaging works.
Yeah.
This is very iPhone, Instagram. Like, it is.
They're using all the things kids actually use.
Yes.
Yeah, like,
they're not
using,
like,
Schmoogle.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
But I like how they do it on screen, but, like, literally, like, on top of the screen,
yeah.
right? So they're not just showing you phone screens. They do the thing that, I mean, other movies
they did
have
that
done
in,
it. They
was
did
it in, Search with John Cho?
Well, that they literally
But it was like
it
everything was, like, happening. Oh, that's right.
But
that's
see,
right.
this is more floating chats.
Yeah.
But, you know, and again, they didn't invent this. But I do like the style of where you're actually seeing the actor, but then bubbles pop up on the screen and
yeah.
how they respond. And they're very subtle about it, you know. Like, I mean, this movie, artistically, I mean, I think this is a really good-looking movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has a definite art house vibe,
mm-hmm.
a slow burn kind of just, it's a really good-looking movie. And the way they put these subtle things with the chat, and it doesn't say, like, Mia and Veda. It's not
right.
real, like, in your face. It just goes back and forth naturally, and if you have been following along,
but you know who's talking,
you know who's saying,
yeah, right,
exactly.
Right, right.
And so I really like the way that they don't make it look real bubbly and everything. It fits in this art house aesthetic.
How old is this filmmaker, out of curiosity? The only reason I ask that is because I feel like the text,
probably in her 20s,
I would say the text slang is pretty spot
she's born
on.
86.
Okay,
so,
okay, so the text,
so
like the way that they are talking to each other in text speak, and I was like, okay, like
yeah.
this doesn't feel like a 40-year-old person trying to write what a 17 or 18 year old would say. Like, this feels pretty
yeah
pretty spot on as far as, like, as I text with my daughter, I'm just like, what does that mean? Now I got to Google what that means. Like, what does that mean?
What's a Finsta?
Yeah. Well, you know what's really interesting, too, is so she was in a movie. I don't know if you guys have seen Charlie Bartlett.
Yeah.
With Anton Yelchin.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. That's a great movie. And that, too, is about a high school She's an actor.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not saying she's a main character. I mean, she's not Kat Dennings or anything, but that's a great movie. And it's also about a kid the same age. You know, I guess he goes to private school or whatever, but like a high school kid, and he's dealing with stuff with family and acting out and things. And that's such a good movie. Like
Charlie Bartlett's kind of underrated. Like that kind of flew under the radar for a long time.
It's so good. And Anton Yelchin, rest in peace. I think he was one of the best actors, one of my favorites. And he's so good in everything. But Charlie Bartlett is where I saw like just his pure charisma and charm that just was glowing, you know, like that kid was charismatic and talented. And if you haven't seen his Love Antasha, the documentary after he passed away with interviews with his family and his story and everything like that, watch that documentary.
Yeah.
Anyway, she was in that. She's an actor and she's done a lot of stuff. But
So they start to kind of become friends, and she kind of starts to is it Nick? Is Nick her other friend?
Nick is the friend in the beginning, and this starts off very much like I also went in not knowing what it was about. That's how I like to, and so all this stuff caught me off guard. Where I'm like, holy, this is what we're doing here. And I went in. Well, I don't want to spoil it. I went into another movie from last year, which deals with a similar subject matter from a different perspective.
Oh, Mass.
And I didn't know what it was about.
So I did the same thing. I had the exact same experience with both movies. I sat down to watch Mass. I just got a screener, and I was like, oh, this is good. And I'm like, oh, this is 90 minutes. Okay, I'll be done quick. And threw it in not knowing anything.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And it was it's
4 powerhouse performances.
It is amazing.
It's a chamber piece.
Is that from 2021?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's basically 4 parents sitting down talking about a school shooting.
But I don't even want to spoil what the. Yeah. But there are actual, you know, without even going into it. You know,
I think I can figure it out.
But it's a parental side of you. And it's a conversation that you've never
seen. Is it just them?
It could be a stage play.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a chamber piece.
Who's in it? Anybody have a note?
Jason Isaacs is in it.
Always a good.
I forget her name, but she plays Aunt Lydia on Handmaid's Tale.
It means nothing to me.
Oh. Yeah.
It's really good, though. All 4 actors. I mean, you'd know all 4 of them. They are so good.
Okay.
What's her name?
Martha Plimpton.
Martha Plimpton. Yeah, I don't know why I was thinking Martha Plimpton. She gives... they're all so good, though, really.
Everybody it's hard top to bottom.
It's hard to say. Like, they did the 4 actors are phenomenal. So, if you... I know that that's a heavy double feature with this one, but I'm just saying both movies are.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, but
it'd be a good Walmart double pack right next to the ammo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe separate them a bit. But 2 closely released movies that tackle this subject matter, but from completely different points of views.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I know that we talk about Julie Bowen, but she's not the focus. We see a little of that.
Yeah. But
seeing it from a different point of view, and especially when it gets into it, it's like, holy cow. So 2 important watches, 2 very well handled films.
Sure. So she starts, you know, she kind of starts to distance her, not on purpose, but like Mia has kind of become Veda's world, and not in a weird way, but like they both have this shared trauma where Nick, who was her best friend, they're joking and laughing through the entire, you know, first, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes of this movie. Nah, probably not, because it's only an hour and a half. But
that's what I was going to say. It started off as like, I'm just like, am I watching like a Lady Bird or something? You know, kinda. I thought it was going to be a teen coming of age art house. And I love Lady Bird. That was my favorite movie of the year. But I'm like, what is this going to be? And then when it goes to what happens, in the bathroom, I'm like, no, this is not like that.
She starts to like pull away from Nick, and not in a bad way. Like Nick didn't do anything, but like she has this experience with Mia, and they start to bond over this.
See how close they were, just like her and the sister.
Yeah,
that's
so masterfully set up. The thing is like the sister starts to fall off again, and there's a gut punch of a scene with
the
sister
later on.
She's annoyed
by everything her sister does, and her sister obviously looked up to her as the greatest person in the world, and they were so close, and she comes around and just completely, she's like, get away from me, and ignoring her.
The sister's doing like TikTok dances and like being a very normal preteen kid.
Yeah.
But
the relationship
none of it
changes.
Yes.
And with Nick, it changes. So we see that set up in 5 minutes of we get to know this character and Veda and her family life and everything, and then how it abruptly changes.
Yeah.
And she's trying to figure it out.
So then she starts experimenting with drugs and alcohol. Again, in a situation like that, totally makes sense, right? Like, you're just trying to find something to keep you level and keep you normal. And when you're 16, 17 years old, I was somewhere around there. You just don't know. Your brain doesn't know what to do. And she's just trying to figure it out. And then she checks in on Quentin because Quentin did lose his brother. Quentin's the other kid we said earlier was in the stall with them. Quentin did lose his brother. So she kind of reaches out and they have another moment, where I think they go to lunch together and like Quentin doesn't really know what to do in that moment. And she just kind of stands up and opens her arms and they have this pretty loving and not in a weird way, but like a loving embrace where she's just like, I get it. Like, I'm with you. Blah, blah, blah.
I thought that was really nice. They meet, these two really don't know each other. And, you know, he's sitting at this table waiting for her to show up.
Right.
And just the fact that she's like, no, come on. And, you know,
do Mia and Veda hook up before she goes on like the mini date with Quentin?
Yeah, they hook up first, and then, because I remember it was her and Mia.
You're talking about when they watch TV together?
Yeah.
No, I think they watch TV together before that happens.
Oh, I didn't know that, but you were talking about that.
Then she tries to kiss him after.
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, okay. And I do, like, this is the scene where her and Mia hang out, and they hook up, and Mia goes home, and this is where she has a blow up with her mom. And her mom's like, look, you know, and again, Julie Bowen has a killer performance and she's given very little to do, which is fine. Like, it's not her movie.
Yeah.
But the scenes that she's in, she kills it. Every scene. Probably shouldn't say that. That's not the right way to praise it. So, but she has a moment where Veda comes home the next day. She's been gone. Her phone's been off. They're freaking out.
I mean, that's not cool to do no matter what you've
been
through.
Yeah, like, you
can't stay out all night when you're in high school. That just doesn't fly. And also now you've been involved in this thing where your parents thought they might have lost you.
Right.
And
then,
not cool at all. And then she's, you know, of course the mom's like, well, if you're going to, are you in a relationship? You know, if you're going to be with someone, blah, blah. And she goes on saying, mom, no,
doing anything. Leave me alone. Yeah. You know, very typical teen where she's like, I'm not doing blah, blah,
she's
blah.
Like, I'm not having sex.
I'm not having sex.
Liar.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And she hits her with this one thing that is like, teenagers, as I'm starting to notice, have a keen sense of when to hit you with just one phrase and walk away.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, did you know, I can't remember her sister's name, did you know so-and-so started her period? And she was like, what? And she's like, yeah, I guess she didn't want to tell you, and just walks away.
Yeah.
And Julie Bowen's just left there with that information. And I'm noticing with my oldest, I'm just like, you sneaky little bee. Because that was pretty
kids
good.
Are dicks,
right?
Yeah.
This is when then she reaches out to Quentin, and Quentin's like, you know, do you want to get together? And he's coming over, and Veda is like, kind of not wearing baggy t-shirts and gym shorts, and a little bit of makeup. And the
sister calls her on it
immediately.
Yeah, you wearing lipstick?
And she's like, what? No,
are you wearing my lipstick?
Is that what she says?
The little sister's into TikTok and makeup and all that stuff, and Veda's not like that. I mean, you know, she, like you said, baggy clothes and just very street style.
Yeah, very tomboyish.
Yeah, she's not interested in all that. So all of a sudden, when she does, that's something that
the sister calls her out immediately. So they have a moment, like they're sitting there watching TV. I don't remember what it was, or a movie or something. And Quentin, like, things are starting, like, they're starting to get close.
They're watching Homeward Bound, I believe.
That's what it is. And she's giving them the guff about making them when.
And I think that's a teenager thing, too, because, like, my son, he's 17. He has his first girlfriend. She seems very nice. But, like, they'll watch TV together, and, like, they'll watch, like, Tangled. And I'm just like, and I mean, I, like, as someone who's in his 50s and still watches cartoons, but I'm like,
what are you doing?
Tangled? Like, you know,
bud. She's a Disney girl.
You gotta set the mood. What are you? You gotta get to watch a scary movie so she gets cuddled up next to you. Like,
okay.
That's very
interesting. I love you, buddy, but you know Flynn Rider. Tell you that.
Can you sing? No?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. He gets that for me. Actually, he can sing better than I can.
So they, in this scene, they start to kind of move closer and closer together. Like, it looks like they're probably going to make out. And then he gets a phone call, and it's, we don't know what's on the other end, but we could figure assume that it's his parents or his mom or his dad, and they are
probably just
not having a good time or having a difficult time.
I can imagine, like, you know, you have two kids and, you know, they lost one of them and then the other one's out and just, you know, going through all their stuff they're doing, like checking in and just having a breakdown, whatever.
Well, and I feel like Quentin's assumed the role of, like, he's the kid who survived, so he has to be extra good.
Right.
Like, not that I got the vibe that he was ever a bad
not
kid.
Not at all.
Right. But that, like, he has, but he's going to be like, I'm going to be such a great son that
I gotta step it up.
Yeah, I'll be twice as good because I lost one.
Yeah, you know? that's an immense,
which is a different trauma experience altogether.
It's a totally different. It's but it is a very valid trauma response.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So he kind of bolts and maybe this is when she goes and hooks up with Mia, and then just, I don't know why her and Quentin are in the car together, but another scene where they kiss each other and Quentin, and you know what? It's very interesting. I we're seeing a lot more of this where
it's very organic. The consent request.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
And even him being like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Like we just saw that in Scream, actually in Scream 5, where like the twin is like, I'm kind of drunk. And what if you're the killer? So like it's coming from the male side where the male is being like, I don't. It's, so I just think that's a very different.
And it's not making fun of it.
No,
right. Like
not
it's
at all.
Not like, oh, isn't this guy a pussy?
No,
like it's like this is normal, because up till now in movies, it's like the two characters stare into each other's eyes and then they just start ripping each other's clothes off. And there's never been any conversation had. And it's like, well, that's enjoyable in a fictional environment. If you try to incorporate that into your real life, you're not going to be on a success only journey.
Correct. Somebody's going to be pissed that you ripped their shirt.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Even if they're in India, they're going to be like, hey man, this was $75.
That's right. Yeah.
What
right.
Are you doing?
Right. I think that's also interesting with the relationships in this movie, how you see all the different characters deal with it. How, you know, Veda is just kind of like, just doesn't know. And then Mia, I think, is more confused about these feelings and thinking maybe there is, you know, some kind of a sexual attraction to Veda. And then Veda then is like out there trying to figure out what she wants. And then she thinks the thing that she wants is Quentin, you know, and to make
and maybe
out with
it
him.
Is maybe it's on, maybe it's mutual, but
yeah,
Quentin
which
just can't.
No, which is fine. But then Quentin though is not in the headspace at all with everything he's dealing with. He's not okay, and it's not that he doesn't like Veda in that way. It's that he just has so much other stuff going on that he can't be in that headspace for that. Which, you know, it almost sounded like a line that you would get in another movie, like being a line, quote unquote.
Right.
But it was really like, it wasn't Veda. It was like, I cannot concentrate.
I still have
on
a little
this.
Hard time believing that even a 17-year-old boy afflicted with trauma is going to turn down the
I don't
loving.
Know, but I, yeah, but
you,
I mean, I think
you
that,
right.
Yeah.
You right.
I mean, but that's the stereotypical thing, right? Like, that's what we
it's
normally would
a
see.
Stereotype for a reason.
Right. Also right.
But, yeah, I like seeing that because I'm sure that there are people out there, though, that would not be able to do anything.
No, I think
you know?
I think in the context
not
of this
out of
movie,
bed
it
or,
makes
totally. You know.
If he was, if like, it's the age that's really the stumbling block for me on that. But, like, you know, like a 30-year-old, I could see being guy being like, I'm not ready for that. But, like, a 17-year-old, I don't know.
I gotta tell you,
but
I mean, we've all been 17, and if the wind blew funny, we're all right.
Yeah,
but we see that side, which is good. You know, it's good to show that different perspective for different victims of this kind of trauma.
I thought there was also a good trauma, not good trauma, but like there's a scene where Veda has to go to the bathroom, and she ends up in front of the bathroom she was in when the shooting happened, and she can't go in. She can't do it, and like she's counting down. She's looking at the clock. She's like, God dang. And she walks outside trying to get home.
This is a little thing, apropos of nothing. Have you ever noticed that in movies, all schools let out at 3 o'clock?
Which is bull.
But I've never known anyone whose school let out at 3 o'clock.
Nope.
Like, the kids get out at 2:30. When I was a kid, we got out at 2:45. It's like
2:42. But it's weird.
But it's always in movies, it's always school lets out at 3 o'clock.
Yep. 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I was like, man. That's they are on the
because
dot.
And the reason it struck me is because you see her looking at her phone. It's 2:58.
2:58.
She picks it back up. 2:58. She picks it back up. It's 2:58. So clearly she's waiting for it to be 3 o'clock. And they never communicate to you that school ends at 3 o'clock. They just know that in the parlance of cinema,
that's movie language.
Movie 3 o'clock lets out at 3 o'clock.
Unless the school or the city you're in goes on lockdown. Then you're free to go whenever you want, like in Scream.
So, but you know,
but I did like she's walking home and she's trying to get out of there, and a kid like crushes a soda can and she pees on herself.
Yeah,
and it's not like this. It's she couldn't go into that bathroom. The sound scared her, and she peed herself.
I'm glad that you said that because I didn't pick up on that. I rewound it and I.
Oh yeah, the kid. I thought the kid crushes a can.
I thought the soda came like flew out onto her from crushing it. I didn't realize that when she said it was just a can, it was a can. And she was getting frustrated. I thought she was mad at him for doing that.
Yeah, no, scared the pee out,
which is powerful. Yeah. I rewound it because I'm like, I didn't see it. I'm like, did the can? Oh, but wow.
Yeah. So then,
well, the subtitle said peeing.
Peeing, yeah. If you, no, you had subtitles on,
well, yeah, I don't remember that one.
And so her life kind of starts to. She starts using like she just can't do it, so she comes and she ends up hooking. Not
she's
hooking
trying
up,
everything.
But she meets up with Harley Quinn Smith's boyfriend. That's who this kid is. The actor that gives. She tries ecstasy for the first time and is tripping balls in school, and she has to call Nick.
Oh, man.
She's got like blue ink all over her face. She's she is. Out of bounds.
Yeah. It's kind of the Leonardo DiCaprio and Wolf of Wall Street, you know, kind of like with the being on drugs and having, because she's flopping down the stairs. That's him trying to get to his car.
Right.
I thought it was really good, but it was similar to that kind of scene.
Yeah.
Where, but that's also,
I like the fact that it ends up, she's dabbling in drugs. Not that she
just tries.
This doesn't turn into a story about an addict. I was like, oh, let's not.
You know why? Because I think they're also showing you how realistic it is for kids to do this stuff, and it doesn't mean like, oh, well, if they tried this because they're trying to figure stuff out, that they're automatically a drug addict.
Right.
Right? So,
right.
Like, this is really showing, I mean, that's, I think, Euphoria, and maybe that's a little bit more on the bonkers side, but it's like, yeah, this is scary to watch, but it's also like, yeah, there's kids out here doing this stuff.
Sure. And I got to tell you, some kids don't come back. Like, that's the scary part, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't, I mean, it looks like Veda's going to be okay.
Yeah.
For the, sort of.
But some kids don't and some do.
Correct.
And I mean, some kids try it and love it and fall down that rabbit hole.
Fall down that rabbit hole.
And, yeah.
But
yeah.
I think stereotypically, especially in movies, we see that, oh, they're starting to get into drugs. Well, of course, their life's just going to be.
Totally. That's normally the.
It is interesting, the drugs she's using, though. Like, it is weed and X.
Yeah.
And so they're like, it's not like she's hitting heroin or meth. Like, it's not highly addictive drugs. It's party drugs. So like there's a different degree of like the drugs that she's using compared to like Jennifer Connelly movie.
Oh,
Requiem for a Dream.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. You know what I mean?
She's
like
not on opiates.
Right. She's taking weed and X, which are just two very weed is not, and I don't think that ecstasy is a habit forming. I don't think so. But yeah, so then her life kind of like this happens and she has a moment and she realizes, okay, she goes back to the therapy with Shailene Woodley.
No, so she talks to the sisters where it really
is that what it is? That's
head,
right. That's right. Where the sister's like, you hate me. And
the sister has a nightmare and she's like, I couldn't sleep and wants to, you know, jump into bed. That trope that you see a lot of times, but she starts talking to her and she's like, why do you hate me?
Right.
And that really makes Veda, you know, it opens her eyes like, wait, what? I don't hate you. And she is kind of thinking back through the way she's treated her.
Right.
And she's like, oh crap. She's like, but it also, I think this is really powerful, not only from like the sister's perspective, but to also show us like when someone's having a bad day, you know, sometimes you run into people and then they act rude or they say something and you're like, you know, what an a-hole or go screw them. But
sometimes
it's like, man, sometimes
just
people
having
are dealing with some intense crap.
You never know.
And you have to, I think that's important in life that when someone acts a little rude or whatever, I mean, obviously if it's this perpetual thing and they're just horrible, that's one thing, but to not just, you know, jump at them or to be like, man, they're just such a jerk. I hate them. What a terrible person. Like maybe that person just lost someone. Maybe someone was in a shooting.
Somebody's having a bad day, which is okay.
So that,
but then that means if I yell at them, someone has to assume that maybe I just,
they should,
right.
They shouldn't assume that you are not having a bad day.
Yeah.
So
that's correct.
If we were in Germany, you'd have to have my bunk.
So according to the road forks you,
according to the, to the U.S. government.
Yes.
Research hasn't definitively answered whether MDMA is addictive, although it affects many of the same neurotransmitter systems in the brain that are targeted by other addictive drugs.
Okay.
So data from both humans and animals suggests that regular MDMA use produces adaptations in the serotonin and dopamine systems that are associated with substance use disorder and related behaviors such as increased impulsivity. So
maybe
so it sounds like it's
hasn't been definitively proven, but
it might be.
But it's most likely addictive. Yeah, right. But if you're an anti-masker, take all the drugs you want. Because
do whatever you want, my man.
Who's going to trust the government?
That's right.
Nobody knows.
Go take about four bags of heroin.
Please do.
Yeah.
So it's a really touching scene where she's just like, "I don't hate you," and we realize, like, the sister realizes that she's been dealing with stuff, but then also Veda wakes up and realizes how she's affecting other people. And
you've also got a really good scene with the dad, where the dad, yeah, like the dad who's,
yeah,
who has, I loved that moment. I was smiling so much. It was so funny with his just dadness. And
he's got a very minor role. Like he takes an even further back seat than Julie Bowen does.
Yeah.
But he has a good scene where Veda,
John Ortiz,
yeah, who's a guy you recognize. Yeah. He's been in all kinds of stuff.
He's in Fast and Furious movies.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He's Campos.
Okay. Sure.
We're
giving these characters names now.
He's also in Bumblebee.
Oh, he is in Bumblebee. Yeah. Okay.
He plays the bee.
Correct. Not the bumble.
Right.
Right.
Because Bumble's for girls.
That's correct. That is right. Yeah, yeah. Where he kind of sits down with her and is very, you're right, he's very much a dad in this moment where he's just like, just let it out. And they're just screaming, you know, F whoever.
They go to this
F
ravine
this,
or whatever. And,
the
and they're yelling out into the, I mean, they do this in Garden State. I love Garden State. And there's a scene where, you know, they take Zach Braff's character, Parkman. Natalie Portman is his manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah.
Takes him to this thing and just yell out into this, you know, ravine. So this is a very cute scene, though, because you're playing this not for the relationship side like in Garden State, but now you're getting this father-daughter bond. And, yeah, he's helping her, and it's going fine. And then he starts yelling just other random stuff and funny dad. I'm so proud of my daughter.
Yeah, she's like, don't be cheesy.
But her, like Jenna Ortega, like, she's so good. And didn't that seem so natural when she was it like, did. Dad? Like,
yeah.
You know,
uh-huh. We're not even cussing anymore.
Yeah, that was a good line.
She's phenomenal.
Yeah. And then she goes home and this is the moment we talked about where she kind of hugs Julie Bowen and she was just like, she lays it all out. She's like, when I told you I wasn't having sex, I lied. I did have sex.
But that's the end of it, though. You know, she first is like,
oh, yeah. The end of it is when she reveals that it's
Mia.
Well,
that's like the tag.
Oh,
it's, so
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah,
she goes on. She's like, I was drinking. I was drunk
I
that
did
time.
Do drugs.
I did that time I did ecstasy at school.
But then, yeah.
Yeah.
And I did have sex.
And I did have sex. And then Julie Bowen
holds on her.
And it's funny because it's like it's such a funny scene, but it's entirely in Julie Bowen's face.
Yes.
Like she doesn't have the necessarily a line that's funny. It's just she has this look of terror in her face of like,
it's perfect.
I'm so happy. It's like only a parent could.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm so happy that my child is telling me these things. Also, please don't ever tell me these things.
I'm terrified.
And I don't want to say the wrong thing to stop you from telling me these things.
Right,
and I also don't ever want to hear these things again. Like, it's all there. The line she has where she's like, well, it was with a girl, so we don't have to worry about getting pregnant.
Like that's, like,
and then she just walks away. And Julie Bowen is just left there, and she doesn't say a word. Slams it, and she was like, okay, I'm ready to have the rest of this conversation.
Yeah.
And then walks out. I thought that was a brilliant,
so
like,
relatable though to
like
the
yeah
parents,
I thought
like,
a button to this whole movie. Yeah. Which is a very heavy movie, and then you get this nice moment of levity,
but that levity, you know, and that comes throughout the movie. I think, you know, props to Jenna Ortega for conveying that.
Yeah.
And I think Nick, the friend, is, you know, they all have moments where they say funny little things or whatever. Like, it, that's why this movie isn't that as hard to watch, right? The subject matter is difficult, but there's enough levity and the performances, the people are charismatic. It's really, and there's still this like feel good, you know, stuff to come out of this, to see these people grow and get better and start to heal, right? There's
it makes
you feel good that they are figuring this stuff out, at least.
I also think, back to the Julie Bowen scene real quick, it's also really impressive that like she can find the humor in that moment. And after 12 years of Modern Family, she could have easily drifted into like making that a sitcom moment.
Yeah, right.
Like, in the camera.
Like, you know, and that she finds the humor, but it's not like a sitcom. And I don't mean to disparage Modern Family, because we already said we think it's a great show, but like it's a different type of humor.
It's that one camera, like looking into the camera.
Yeah. And it's very much purposefully funny, where this is funny, but it's not the same. Its goal isn't
funny
to make you laugh necessarily, even though there is humor in the
moment.
And like that she can dial it in to that degree. It was impressive.
And then you know, in typical trauma fashion, like just when you think you have a handle on it, something happens and it kicks you right in the dick and you have to deal with all of it all over again.
Yeah, she's Mia's dance class and they're going to meet up afterwards and everything looks happy.
Everything's fine. And she gets an alert on her phone that people have been there's another mass shooting at a school, and she goes right back into her trauma response. Yeah. And that's how it ends. Like, and that's the thing about trauma is just when you think you are okay, it could be something so stupid or something so tiny and it rips that Band-Aid right off and that scab has to heal all over again.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's actually pretty smart. I don't see that very often in film is like, yeah, everybody's okay, everybody's happy,
right,
but you're not, you know, like totally. John McClane is not okay. You
right
know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
at the end of post Die Hard, that dude is effed.
Right.
He's got some stuff going on in his brain.
But you never really see it from the psychological.
No. Never.
Like, you know, and that was what was so great about the first Halloween movie, right? Is
yeah
that, like, it's not just like, oh, thank God we killed the killer and that's over. And then we now go back to our lives. Like, yeah, that's not how that would
that's
work.
I will always say. I know that Rob Zombie's in that world, the mm-hmm Rob Zombie Halloween 2 does have some issues, but it does deal with that, right? Like,
right,
it's dealing with Lori post a horrible, you know, mass murder attack.
Right.
And what does her brain do? What does your brain do when you are the survivor of that? And you have to look at your friend who's scarred up every day and the dad who, you know, the Sheriff Brackett who's broken at that point. What does if this is your brother, do you start to believe that you've got this sickness in mm-hmm you too? Like, it's just
yeah
this.
Which
I know it.
Kind
I know
addresses.
It's. It does. Yeah. I know that that movie is problematic, but I do think that tone or that message is very interesting.
Well, I think Halloween 2018 handles that so wonderfully with the three generations of Strode women and
sure
how they're dealing with. You
which
see
is
Lori,
why we were so mad at Halloween Kills.
Yeah, Halloween Kills.
And
yeah,
because it was like that first one was so
good,
so yeah good, and yeah the next one is so stupid.
So oh it's a. I like it, but I'm not the. You know.
Oh, you. I didn't even remember you
yeah
liked that.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a Halloween movie.
Rough.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's good. Yeah. I'm just saying I like it.
I hope ends is. I just hope.
And they just
ends
started filming that,
slam
didn't they?
I just hope it ends.
It's
yeah
not.
Well,
they'll find a way.
Remember when they told you?
Do.
Remember, I hate to break to you, evil dies tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't.
It didn't.
Well, I wouldn't trust Halloween Ends, buddy. Or even No Time to Die. This advertising people are really getting.
They're not bringing him back.
Well,
no Time to Die.
No Time to Die was the title of the movie.
Yeah, and he died.
Yep, there was no time to die, and they had 2.5 hours, and he died.
And it felt great. It was a perfect ending.
So
to
I'm
that
saying
series.
These ad men are getting tricky. Yeah.
Batman's not even going to be in the next movie.
Yeah, it's just the Riddler.
Yeah, it's the Riddler and Jim Gordon.
But yeah, and I do like the ending because, you know, she will never truly be over this, especially since this isn't clearly school shootings are not isolated events that won't occur again.
Nope.
Right?
Nope.
And so it's every time there's another one.
You know, oh,
and,
yeah.
And presumably
every time,
each
man
time it will theoretically get a little easier, but it's always yeah going to be a struggle
yeah
for her.
I think that's important not to brush things aside like, oh, that was 5 months ago. You know,
right,
they should get over something. You know, when you just got to think, like, people deal with stuff all in their own way, as we've seen through all these different lives. And you have to remember that the time varies and it's all so unique per person. So, yeah, it's not like, oh, that was a year ago. Why are they still hanging on that? Like, you know, that's how it works. So,
yeah, that's exactly yeah how it
there's
works.
There's a lot, again, why I say I think this is important, because there's so much to take in from this movie and doesn't feel like an Eat Your Vegetables movie. It feels relatable and it's done in a way where you're, you know, entertained is a hard word to use, but you know what I mean? It's not a
right
slog to get through. It's like,
well, that's
you're
that's the thing. That's the nice thing
invested
about this one, too, is it's only an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And they're not in man, I Matt Basler and I have had this conversation where certain movies just need to live in that hour and a half, hour 45.
Right.
And I think that this movie with this subject matter and the way that it is handled, hour 30, hour 35 is like, that's where yeah it needs to live.
Yeah. Agreed.
You know? Good, like, time. Yeah,
yeah. So, well, anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, don't forget our Patreon.
at patreon.com/realspoilers. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Jim's mom reports him to the police.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's going to ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.